the head of death. Padam, feet. Datva, placing. Aruroha, got up. Adbhutam, wonderful. Griham, on the airplane, which resembled a big house. Translation. When Dhruva Maharaj was attempting to get on the transcendental plane, he saw death personified approach him. Not caring for death, however, he took advantage of the opportunity to put his feet on the head of death, and thus he got up on the airplane, which was as big as a house. Purport. To take the passing away of a devotee and the passing away of a non-devotee as one and the same is completely misleading. While ascending the transcendental airplane, Dhruva Maharaj suddenly saw death personified before him, but he was not afraid. Instead of death giving him trouble, Dhruva Maharaj took advantage of the death presence and put his feet on the head of death. People with a poor fund of knowledge do not know the difference between the death of a devotee and the death of a non-devotee. In this connection, an example can be given. A cat carries its kitten in its mouth, and it also catches a rat in its mouth. Superficially, the catching of the rat and the kitten appear to be one and the same, but actually they're not. When the cat catches the rat in its mouth, it means death for the rat, whereas when the cat catches the kitten enjoys it. When Dhruva Maharaj boarded the airplane, he took advantage of the arrival of death personified, who came to offer him obeisances. Putting his feet on the head of death, he got up on the unique airplane, which is described here to be as big as a house, Griham. There are many other similar instances in the Bhagavad literature. It is stated when Kardama Muni created an airplane to carry his wife, Devahuti, all over the universe, the airplane was like a big city carrying many houses, lakes, and gardens. Modern scientists have manufactured big airplanes, but they're packed with passengers who experience all sort of discomforts while riding in them. Material scientists are not even perfect in manufacturing a material airplane. In order to compare to the plane used by Kardama Muni, or the plane sent from Vishnu Loka, they must manufacture an airplane equipped like a big city with all the comforts of life, lakes, gardens, parks, etc. Their plane must be able to fly in outer space and hover and visit all other planets. If they invent such a plane, they will not have to make different space stations for fuel to travel into outer space. Such a plane would have an unlimited supply of fuel, or, like the plane from Vishnu Loka, would fly without it. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Ginandana Salakaya Chakshura Militam Yenatas Mai Sri Gurave Namaha. So in this particular section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have been discussing about the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj. And so far, we saw that somehow or other, Dhruva Maharaj performed his devotional service and respected all his superiors, worshipped the Lord, worshipped the Vaishnavas, and this Vaikuntha plane basically appeared and ready to take him back to the spiritual world. So Dhruva Maharaj was prepared to enter that Vaikuntha plane. And then today we're seeing that just as he was doing so, at one point death personified approached him. But to Dhruva Maharaj, that was not at all something to think about. It is said death bowed down to him, and he stepped on the head of death into that Vaikuntha plane. So his focus all along was entering the Vaikuntha plane. His focus all along was the Supreme Lord. His focus was not what is happening to my body. And although he was aware of what was happening to his body, it was not that he was oblivious to his body, but he did not become emotionally involved in the event. So when it became time to give up the body, that was not at all an emotional shock to him. Oh no, here's death. Such a thought did not occur to him. Because death was simply a transition towards the spiritual sky. The spiritual sky, the transcendental abode of Lord Krishna, was the focus of Dhruva Maharaj. And that is maybe one very strong point in this verse and purport, where we see the aloofness that Dhruva Maharaj is displaying. This is not possible simply by some determination. This is really only possible by cultivation, by gradual building up one's spiritual life. It meant that Dhruva Maharaj had consistently and deeply practiced his devotional service and built it up very carefully. And whatever he practiced, that he maintained, and then he took it a step further. If we look at Dhruva's progress in spiritual life, we see that it is step-by-step progress. That he, in the end, was able to give up eating altogether before he received the darshan of the Lord. But in the beginning, he was just minimizing his eating, simplifying it, and finally just satisfied with some leaves and this, that. So the point is that Dhruva Maharaj followed a step-by-step progress. That is the process, as is described. Satam prasanga mama virya sambadu bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kata. It is said then, by being in the association of devotees, by hearing transcendental sound vibration, then we can gradually advance Shraddha, what was it? Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anukramisyati. Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anukramisyati. Then one can go from the initial faith in Krishna, that taking shelter of Krishna, Krishna Bhakti Koila Sarva Karma Krita Hai, that from practicing devotional service, all benefit will come. From that stage, one can come to deep emotional attachment to Krishna. And ultimately, then we speak of real bhakti. Then real bhakti is there. Otherwise, we are trying to come to bhakti, bhakti in practice. Like driving lessons, right? It is not exactly real driving. We may say, no, I am driving a car now. Yes, you are, but the instructor is sitting next to you and is grabbing the wheel sometimes and is sometimes stepping on the brakes, and in any mistake you make, he's there also, right, to kind of stay in control. But when we think, I am driving, you're not really driving yet. You're learning how to drive. So in the same way, we can say, yes, I'm engaged in devotional service. Or we can say, we are practicing our devotional service and learning how to perform our devotional service. Such learning is not simply a matter of following a 3 months bhakti program where one gets a crash course in a few of the books of the Goswamis, and then, yes, okay, now I'm ready for bhakti. Bhakti is a gradual process, a gradual development. Bhakti is the ripened fruit. Of course, in one sense, There is no difference. Ripe mango, unripe mango, both are mango. Right? In one sense, no difference. Unripe bhakti is also bhakti. But still, all the full symptoms are not manifesting. So, by studying the life of Dhruva Maharaj, we can see how deep absorption in service to the Supreme Lord lifts us above the most shocking aspects of material existence. Not that like, now death is approaching and Dhruva Maharaj, Hare Krishna, 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 was trying to somehow or other take shelter of the holy name. Dhruva Maharaj was fully realized, and therefore he did not die as a devotee in practice, but he died as a devotee who was transcendental. That is the aim, to become transcendental before we leave this body. Iha yasya hariyadasi karmanamani sagira nikala swapi avasta sujiva mukta sa uchite. That during this very lifetime, we are meant to become Siddha Purush, to become transcendental personalities during this very lifetime. Just like it is at Pancha Chordam Vanam Vrajet, at the age of 50, one must go to the forest and take to the Vanaprastha Ashram. So, Vanaprastha is the time where one's not investing much in the present arrangements for life. Vanaprastha is taking whatever is available in nature. He's living so simple, he'll eat fruits that fall off the tree, he will dress in tree bark, things like that. Take some roots in that grow wild. In that way, Vanaprastha is not bothering his time to make any material arrangement. That is a principle. According to time, place, and circumstance, it may be filled in a different way. But Pancha Chordam Vanam Vrajet, that the Vanaprastha will go to the forest, basically means that he will not invest in this lifetime to build up a comfortable life. The Grihastha has to arrange, has to move from here to there, has to create stability, as to have a good base. From that base, everything will be done. If the base is peaceful, nice, favorable, and even dedicated to Krishna, then the whole family can be benefited from it. And everyone will find its rest point there. The base is important. The breadwinner can return to that place and recharge. The children can find an anchor there in the midst of a confusing world. Right? And in that way, all the family members are just taking strength from that Krishna conscious home. This is the Grihastha Ashram. But in the Vanaprastha Ashram, not even that, because the Vanaprastha is preparing for the next life. The Vanaprastha's main meditation is not this life. The Vanaprastha's meditation becomes the end of life. And he leaves family life at an early stage. Sannyas is also such a thing. Sannyas, what an invention. It is difficult to understand for the Western mind. Why would one just at one point go against his own feelings? One's feelings are feelings of deep affection for his family. And then one must just ignore these feelings and walk away from that family and just go through the pain. Why? Why? The principle is simply in Vedic culture that the sannyasi was going through the pain of separation, not at the time of death, but before death, so that at the time of death he would be free and not overwhelmed by all kinds of separation. So therefore we see that the end of life in Vedic culture is not meant for focusing on the needs of this life, but focusing on the needs of the end of life and the next life, the destination attained in the next life. Dhruva Maharaj had more than sufficient invested in this, in these activities. Komarama charit pragyo dharman bhagavati tam iha. Manusam dulabam janma. It is stated that from the very early stage of life, one must engage in spiritual life. This human form of life is very rarely attained, and one must somehow or other take advantage of it. So Dhruva Maharaj did that from early age, and Prahlad Maharaj did that from early age, and pointed out to the demoniac schoolmates the necessity of not wasting one's life with playing, but simply becoming fixed up like this throughout one's life in making progress. Progress towards our eternal destination. So that is the principal point that is now under discussion. Srila Prabhupada, to my surprise, dedicated quite some part of the purport about describing the Vaikuntha plain once again, right? Already in earlier purports, we've had descriptions of a Vaikuntha plain. Mahavad. Okay, thank you very much. We have had descriptions of a Vaikuntha plain. And here it is described, such a plane is not like a machine, but it is rather a very wonderful, comfortable environment, not like kettle class on any airlines cramped in some chairs which are too small to begin with, and at the end of the journey still feel smaller, and so on. Nothing like that, but transcendental planes or heavenly planes equipped with gardens, lakes like Kardama Muni had. So what to say? A totally different reality. So here a great distinction is made between the nature of Krishna's mystic ability and the mystic ability of man. Man is simply imitating the arrangements of Krishna, but imperfectly. Srila Prabhupada points out how whatever man creates resembles the creation of the Lord. Just like a bird has wings and a plane has wings, and a submarine looks like some sort of fish. In this way, all the shapes, etc., are similar to Krishna's arrangement. A car is driving on four wheels. Then it's stable, just like the four-legged animals. So in this way, we see so many similarities. A car has headlights. A car has an inlet and an outlet, and if we really look at it, we see that we have fire in the stomach, and in the same way a car also is functioning on the principle of fire. A house is also resembling the human body. It has windows, it has doors, front door, back door, it has a sewage system, it has a nerve system by electric wiring, and so on. And basically we see that in so many ways it is a reflection, it is a further expansion of the bodily form of life. So in this world, whatever man can do is imitating the arrangements of the Supreme Lord. That is, and those imitations are naturally imitations. Prabhupada was raising this point in a discussion with Dr. Wolf Rodkai in Germany. This Dr. Wolf was saying, but what if the scientist will one day be able to create a living cell? What if they will be able to do it? Then what? Prabhupada said, so then what? He said, just see. He said there was a nightclub and one man was making a performance imitating a dog. He said, and the place was packed. People were paying for it, right? To see a man imitating a dog. He said, although, and nobody cares about the real thing. In the street, a real dog is walking. Nobody will pay any money to see. But for a man imitating a dog, they will pay. Prabhupada said, just see. They will pay for the imitation, but for the real thing, they will not give anything. So what if the scientist one day will be able to make a living cell? Right? What about him who makes unlimited varieties of forms of life in the most intricate ways? What about him who makes the most amazing airplanes? Right? Who cares that man can make some machine that can fly in the sky? And what is the price we pay of all the air and noise pollution? The greenhouse effect is what we have. The changing of the weather pattern is a result of it. Is it so great? Is it so glorious? Maybe not. Right? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, people should not be flying with these planes. Right? The only one who should fly on the planes are the devotees. Nobody else. Right? For spreading the Sankirtan mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the Vaishnavas who have transcendental vision are not seeing like the ordinary common man. The Vaishnavas, they say, only devotees should use planes in this world. Nobody else. Everyone else should be stopped. I am agreeable to that. It would make life a lot more pleasant. Anyhow, we are ourselves remembering Krishna in this way. Krishna as the supreme creator. Krishna as the one who has perfectly designed everything. And we realize that the material world is perfectly designed. And even if apparently there are imperfections, like for example, a desert seems to be an imperfection. A drought seems to be an imperfection. A flood seems to be an imperfection. But all such imperfections are also perfect. Because they create hardship for the living beings. They give us trouble, right, such things. Kunti Devi is praying, Vipada Santutasa Swatatra Tatra Jagat Guru. She is saying, please, again and again, give me these problems. Because at the time when we were facing so many difficulties, at that time, we were always remembering you. So Kunti Devi understood that the nature of the material trouble and strife is that it is meant to bring us to the Lord, and it is meant to help us remember the Lord. It is there to make us endeavor in our surrender to Krishna. And this endeavor will give us strength. It is through this endeavor that we are gradually building up. It is this endeavor that is the step-by-step process of devotional service. That is how we progress, by steady endeavor. So spiritual life is not just about inspiration. Spiritual life is obviously meant for inspiration. If there's no inspiration, then how can we engage in spiritual life? But then spiritual life is not only all about inspiration. Spiritual life is also about step-by-step progressing, about voluntarily taking hardship and understanding that by taking this difficulty in for Krishna that we become strong. Tapodivyam putraki yena sattvam sujitya smat pramasu kyam tvanantam. Lord Rishabdev instructed his sons about the need for accepting austerity, so that gradually one could rise above the three modes of material nature and reach the stage of Brahma Sukha. Yagya Dhanas Tapaschaiva Bhavaninam Manisinam. Even saintly persons are not giving up the processes of sacrifice, charity, and austerity. That must be maintained, because even the saintly personalities become purified by such activity. So this is the arrangement of Krishna. So we should not lament, oh, it's so difficult. Oh, spiritual life is so difficult. Why all these obstacles when I'm trying to be a devotee? And then so many obstacles. No, these obstacles are good for us. I once was traveling in India on a first-class AC train. The first-class AC train in India is a class where you have a personal servant. You have a bell. Every passenger has his own bell. So you have your seat and you have your own bell, and you can call your attendant. So there was one, I was sharing the compartment with one other man, and the best description for this man is he was a blob, right? He was extremely fat and also very soft. No muscle, just sort of the fat was inside the skin flowing in different directions and spreading out on the seat, without too much form in it. So the man was all the time ringing the bell, every 10 minutes. And then a servant would appear. Yes, sir. And then he said, do you have another cushion? And they packed another cushion in his back. And then he wanted another cushion on the other side. And in this way, they were packing him up with little, propping him up with cushions. And then there was a station. Okay, go outside and bring some fruits.
some fruity also. Ah, and like that, he just kept on demanding and demanding the whole trip. And I studied him. Right? I find one of the interesting things of travel is to study people. And he was a very interesting case, right? Because he was the living illustration of what happens when one tries to remove all austerity from life. And this man had become so soft and weak, and just, he had become like a jellyfish, right? A jellyfish has has no bones. It's just all jelly. So, what can we say? A symbol of a person with no willpower. A symbol of a person who cannot live for any principle. Right? So, tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. Austerity is giving us strength by which we can follow spiritual principles. Therefore, from the early age of life, one must perform austerity. Right? From the early age of life, one must teach one's children simplicity. If we give them everything and anything, oh my darling, oh my baby, oh yes, they become weak. They become very weak and dependent. Some level of austerity must be there. We can see it. We can compare the people from Holland who grew up in a welfare state where everything was provided, everything was made soft and sheltered. And we compare them to people that come from countries that were not so affluent, like former communist countries, where life was much more austere. And we see in the people that came from that more austere background much more strength and determination. Right? And we see that these socialistic welfare states, such as where we live in, or Scandinavia, produce people who are very weak. So, what to do? Therefore, in spiritual life, we are not afraid of some hardship, not afraid that some difficulty will come. We may not be like Kunti Devi and pray for it, but when the difficulties do come, we accept them as the mercy of Krishna, and we accept it. Yes, these things are sent to us by the Supreme Lord for the sake of making spiritual advancement. And without, what can we do? So that is our condition. Srila Prabhupada made this International Society for Krishna Consciousness so that people from all over the world would have the facility to join Krishna Consciousness. And it is very favorable for us in so many ways that we have such nice temples where we can go and where Krishna consciousness is made easy. So it's favorable for us to join this movement. It's made easy. And even to stay. But then we notice that as the years go by, we realize that sometimes ISKCON is too comfortable. That it is sometimes too comfortable. That everything is too easy. Where's prasadam? Right? Is it ready? Not yet. Why not? Right? I was in Africa in 1979 in one country. And in the morning, the devotees would say, did the life members bring the fruit already? Yes, they did. What did they bring? Oh, papayas. Papayas, no mangoes, only papayas. Okay. Any programs on today? Yes, there's a program with the Guptas. Oh, the Guptas, well, then I'll go. Mrs. Gupta cooks really nice halva, right? Oh, yes. I have seen that sometimes our movement, with all its facility, is creating too much comfort zone, and that therefore we also have the challenge to take on some austerity. Austerity will naturally come in the course of preaching. In the course of preaching, austerity will be there. There is no doubt about it. But then, once we perform such austerity, it becomes blissful. We were in the European Rainbow Festival, and some people joined, some boys and girls. After some time, the boys left, but the girls stayed. And then one of the girls also left, but just surfaced in Bulgaria and wrote me a letter and saying, I'm running here in 1 meter of snow from car to car to distribute prasadam, and I'm happy. I said, this is great. Running in 1 meter of snow from car to car to distribute prasadam and happy. This is transcendental. This is not ordinary. This is not mundane. This is spiritual. And by that running, each step is a giant step. A giant step towards the spiritual world. So some preaching. Preaching to distribute the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Remains the special austerity in this age. Not like Dhruva Maharaj living in a forest eating leaves, right? That is not the cutting edge. In this age, the cutting edge of austerity is in preaching. There is no doubt about that. Anyhow, we see that time is moving on very fast, and somehow or other, if we manage to keep a connection with Lord Chaitanya's movement, whatever they do to us, we will not leave. Whatever life may do to us, still let us not become inimical to Krishna. It is said that there are two ways to become removed from Krishna. One is by becoming involved in sensual activities, by becoming involved in sense gratification beyond the four regulative principles. It said, one who does so removes or comes on a distance from Krishna. But one who becomes envious of Krishna, rejects Krishna as the Supreme Lord, rejects the teachings of Krishna or the process of chanting Hare Krishna, such a person can lose Krishna altogether. But one who has sensual weakness and is engaging in sense gratification can still remember Krishna. And if we still remember Krishna, then we must carry on. We must feed our relationship with Krishna by voluntarily doing some service for Krishna. We should somehow or other come to the temple and do some service in the temple. Because by doing some service in the temple, we will become spiritually strong. we will become once again spiritually strong. Right? Our strength will return. The strength may come, may go, but it will return. And for those who never left the temple, we can continue to build up our strength as well through devotional service, so that we become stronger and stronger. Then I was reading an article written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was describing something about the Jagannath Mandir in Puri. And it was nice, an article. He gave interesting information. He was saying that the present temple is only 800 years old, and that previously there must have been another temple which is built of blue stone, and that therefore Puri is known as Neelachala. So, in this way, he described some details about Jagannath Puri, and it started interesting. And then, in the article, at one point, he begins to describe Mahaprasad, the Mahaprasadam that has been offered to Lord Jagannath. And then he begins to describe how the rationalist may argue against prasad. How the rationalist may basically say that prasad, right, is simply a waste of energy, the whole idea. Prasad is unwanted, prasad should be stopped. Of course, we are surprised when something like that is being said, because as devotees, prasad is very significant to us. But he's describing the mentality of the rationalist, and he's saying the rationalist will say that the Supreme Lord is spiritual. The Supreme Lord is infinite. The Supreme Lord is independent. The Supreme Lord is totally spiritual and not dependent at all on anything material. Then why are you offering him some sabji and rice? Right? What does the Supreme Lord have to do with sabji and rice? What does he have to do with mundane preparations, with things made of mundane energy, the infinite? Right? In fact, why offer anything like that to the Lord? Why even maintain temples, which are simply mundane buildings? And in this way, he writes in this article. He said then, the rationalist came back in a new guise, in a new dress. The same rationalist then appeared in a new dress, and this time in the dress of a devotee, saying that, yes, such things are not required by the Lord, but they're beneficial for the devotee. Because the devotee, by making the offerings of prayers, of temples, and even offerings of foodstuffs, the devotee is getting benefited. It said, but the Lord has no need for these things, says the rationalist, when he dresses up like a devotee. Yeah. So first we had an atheistic or an impersonalist rationalist, and then we had a devotee rationalist. But then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes the article one step further and takes it. He says, no, we must offer the Lord some sabji, and we must offer him some rice, because it is an expression of love. And the Lord needs that love. Very much so. And the Lord reciprocates with that love. Love is not one way. One way love is not complete. One way love is there. When love comes from one side, oh, then we can wait. Right. But love from one side is waiting. Right? If love coming from one side does not die, then it is waiting for reciprocation. Oh, I'll wait for a long time. Krishna is waiting. Krishna is waiting for a long time, waiting for us to come and to reciprocate with his loving actions. Then we can cook some sabji. We can cook some sabji and some rice for Krishna, and maybe some other little extra preps to make it more attractive as an expression of love. So therefore Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is stating that merely rationalism, merely logic will not do, even if it is devotional logic. He's explaining that logic or reason must be subjected, must be secondary to love. That reason must be employed in the service of love. He said that love without reason, the nature of love is that it can become attracted to the wrong objects and go into lower directions of lust. Right? So reason is there to protect that love and to keep the love pure and on track. But otherwise, reason is only of any gain to us if it is employed in the service of love, right? Because it is love that is the real aim and goal. Prema pumarta mahan, love for the Supreme Lord in reciprocation. So, this is how we are carrying on in our spiritual life, serving Krishna by cooking some sabji and some rice, right? By cleaning the floor for him, by doing simple things. This is brilliant, and actually the most exalted and most profound philosophy. Vaishnavas have been accused. This is all sentimental. Cooking some sabji. You're working and working and cutting vegetables for what? Right? On your free Sunday, you are slaving and slaving away. Finally, a little break and just cutting and cutting so many vegetables. What for? For God's sake, rest. Right? But no, you will work and work on Sunday like this to cook a Sunday feast. Yes. Because Krishna needs a little sabji and little rice and some puris and some kachoris and some other preparations, right? Luchi chini, puris filled with cream, it says. You ever tasted puris filled with cream after they've been offered to Krishna? Have you? But they are described, just see. So we must try, we must. In this way, loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, and in there, we can become inspired in our Krishna consciousness. With logic alone, there is only austerity, right? But with the combination of love and reason, right, there is the austerity that supports the loving service of Krishna, which will develop love in our heart. And that kind of austerity is desirable. With that, I will end. Because that is the love, that is the austerity that Dhruva performed. The austerity that brought him to love. Any questions, any comments?
Yeah. That's true. There are warnings that austerity can make us hard-hearted. Therefore, austerity. Of course, I've just more or less given a whole explanation, right? The explanation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, in one sense answers the question. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada pointed out that there is no need to separately perform austerity, but that austerity must be performed in the context of devotional service. Mind you, that could include a dry fast for Ekadasi. It could, right? Although such a rigid following of Ekadasi should be in proportion to one's daily service. One should not, in his special austerities that we sometimes perform, suddenly go to extremes if we are not in our everyday practice on a high level of austerity. Just like any exercise. If you never do yoga, then the yoga teachers are telling you every time, slowly, slowly. They say, no, I can do it. I can do it. No, slowly, slowly. No, but I can do it. No, don't do it. Don't push so hard. Slowly, slowly. Because you will stretch a muscle a bit too much and suddenly, yes, you can do it. Oh, something. Three weeks. So it is recommended like that to go gradual. So in the same way, austerity in devotional service is there and may be performed. But we are not meant to, if we are not in our everyday practice, living a life of great austerity, to perform so much austerity. It is not required. But this austerity, tapasya, will make us very strong, very strong. There's no doubt that in this movement, in the process of book distribution, we are right on the cutting edge. There's no doubt about that. There's nothing, in terms of austerity, there's nothing that compares. And that one who really embraces that, right, can after that perform so many austerities. So in performing austerity, one has to see where the focus should lie. Yeah. And therefore, the dharmasya tatvan hitam guhayam. The truth, the absolute truth, is not just found in the scriptures. Tarka pratista sruti vibina nasa varisya. What is it? Nasa varisya. What's the second line, Guranga? Yasyamatam nabinam. Thank you. Yasyamatam nabinam. Nasa varisya yasyamatam nabinam. Dhammasya tattvam nihitam guhaya mahajana yena katasapanta. So, dhammasya tattvam, the absolute truth is hidden within the heart of the devotee. So that's there. We look in the heart of the devotee. Because the devotee, he would tell us, give special attention to this. And no need to give so much attention to that other aspect of sadhana bhakti. No need to be so austere in fasting. Like we see, for example, that Srila Prabhupada was
was going on a parikrama, and he was wearing shoes in Vrindavan. Shame, shame, shoes, right? If you dare to wear shoes, everyone goes, shame, shame, shoes. Vrijbasis will point at your feet and say, juta, juta, right? And you walk like this, so there you go, bare feet, walking on the sharp stones and thorns. And Srila Prabhupada wore shoes. Oh, wow. But we see, so in that area, not the most austere, but in terms of preaching, the most austere. So no doubt, the austerities must be performed for preaching. That is the main focus. Then other ones may follow, but they are secondary. Is it the Supreme Lord or is it Lord Brahma? I mean, when I hear the verse, it sounds to me like Lord Brahma.
Later it is said that you appeared as Narasimha.
Well, it sounds like Mahavishnu. We know that Advaita Acharya is performing austerity. We see that Lord Mahavishnu is desiring to get the darshan of Lord Krishna. So, in one sense, the very dealings with the material energy is an austerity, because the Lord Krishna is not in any way directly dealing with the material energy. Yeah. So, but Lord Mahavishnu takes the austerity of interacting with the material world. I mean, in that sense, it's an austerity. Because, after all, the material world is not the desire of the Supreme Lord. So it is stated, he doesn't desire it. So, the only austerity that I can see on the part of the Supreme Lord is that he voluntarily deals with a world that he has no that he didn't desire. So in that sense, he's not like only engaged in his pleasure pastimes, but he's dealing with the material energy, which is not his desire, actually, for it to be there. So the form in which the material energy is manifesting itself is not what Krishna desires. Therefore, one might say, well, therefore, why doesn't he just stay absorbed with the pleasure potency? But when he does get involved with the external energy, there's an element of austerity there, of voluntarily accepting something unpleasant for a higher goal. But I don't see any other austerity in the life of the Supreme Lord. Can you read the verse one more time? Okay. I'll think about it.
I can read the whole verse. All the saintly persons present offered their prayers in this way. O Lord, O Supreme Maintainer of those shelters at your lotus feet, O original personality of Godhead, a process of austerity and penance in which you instructed us before is the spiritual power of your very self. It is by austerity that you create the material world that lies dormant within you.
I think it's what I said. I think my answer was in line with the verse.
Yeah, in the material world. That's the point. In the material world, because not in the spiritual world, you see. Padam, and there every step is a dance, every word is a song, right? But it's in the material world. Yeah, so because when the Lord deals with the material world, austerity begins. That's the point. Yeah. When he deals with the material energy, even for him austerity begins. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? For us, because he's the supreme controller, he at least is in control of it, right? It's already austere for him, although he's in control of it. But we, you know, we are not even in control of it. Can you imagine? Shoo. What we have to go through in this material world. Anybody else? Okay then. On the head of death. He's so humble and suddenly he steps on death. Yeah, I also noted that. Actually, it flashed through my head also. Just see. I guess that in this case, although Dhruva is very humble, he is not sentimentally humble. So, therefore, he's in knowledge. And he can see, he can make the distinction between spirit and matter. And because he was seeing that death is really not very major, not a major issue, not at all something of great significance, but rather an insignificant element. Yeah. Therefore, he did not offer respect to death, but rather, although he naturally was respect, but rather he accepted this, that death now bowed down to him. Not because he considered himself great, but because he was on a great path. Because he realized that one who is on the spiritual path, then suddenly death is no longer an obstruction. Yeah. Then death is simply fully cooperating. Right? So he understood that this bowing down of death was an expression of the cooperation of death. And therefore he stepped on the head of death, taking advantage of this cooperation, of this mood of cooperation. So yes, he was reciprocating in this way with the cooperative spirit of death. Then, and stepped even on the head into the Vaikuntha plane. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two twin brothers, I mean, with moments apart of birth, you know. And if you calculate their charts, right, they virtually don't look any different, the charts. Because, you see, for a rising sign to change, or for the degrees of the planets to significantly change, right, in a chart, a minute or seconds really doesn't make that much difference. Yeah? And therefore, you would expect that these two brothers, or, well, two twin brothers, would be virtually not only externally the same, but also in character. And then we see that distinct differences in character, distinct. Even Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha, distinctly different. So it is bewildering how this works. It is bewildering. Of course, it's not surprising that it is bewildering, because the complexity of the material arrangement is so great, right, that it never fails to bewilder us again and again, that it always exceeds the capacity of our intelligence. That the planets have their influence, there is no doubt. There is no doubt. We know that the full moon has its influence. We know that the dark moon has an influence. We can see how the planets have an influence. And sometimes, if we calculate things through astrology, it's quite amazing how much astrology seems to know about us. Right? If we just really read these charts, right, and we have them done very properly, and then it's quite amazing how much they know, or how much you can know from the lines in someone's palm. If somebody really knows how to read a palm, what they cannot see there, it's amazing. It really makes us wonder, like, but, you know, do I have any independence at all? Yeah. So, that we are influenced by the planets, that we can understand. The mechanics of it are very difficult to understand. To what extent the science of astrology is accurate in all details, it's hard to say. But in greater lines, if astrology is properly applied, can give us a lot of insights. So it has its value, but is of secondary importance. The influence of the planets are there, but can be also purified. It can be purified. One can transcend them. One can use these influences in the service of Krishna. So ultimately, the only thing that we can understand is the service of Krishna. That's the one thing that will be revealed to us more and more. And through the service of Krishna, maybe so much other information will be revealed. But without the service of Krishna, nothing is certain. How can we understand the influence of the planets, or the rotation of the planets, or the universe, without devotional service to Krishna? Only devotional service to Krishna attracts the mercy of Krishna. Then we may understand. And one who is under Jupiter may become a materialist, and the one who is under Rahu may become a devotee. And the one who has his Rahu may use that Rahu quality to cut down the atheists and to smash all those who have deviant understandings. And the one who is in Jupiter may use his Jupiter for a nice material life. Right. So we see that Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Varagya Vichite. Connect your Jupiter with Krishna. Connect your Rahu with Krishna. Right. What's wrong with Rahu? Just connect it with Krishna. Rahu is okay if connected with Krishna.
it can be very useful. Like, in so many ways. I know someone who has the Rahu in the sixth house, and who is a temple president in a very tough place, with all tough people, and the sixth house is the house of defense. And because Rahu is there, his ability to defend is very strong and heavy and cutting and sharp. And he is like that. But he keeps the place together. Without him, the rats would long ago taken it over. So he keeps the rats out of the door with Rahu. So he uses Rahu in Krishna's service, and by doing so may go back to Godhead. So Rahus and Jupiters are useful when engaged in Krishna's service. Finished. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.